is the legendary Humble and Fred Show, Canada's national morning show.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
The following episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by Sleep Country, Pizza Pizza, FYI Music News, The Retirement Sherpa, and our newest sponsor, Carnivore Club at carnivoreclub.co. And as always, we broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, Toronto, nestled in the cozy bosom of the Squatty Potty Storefront Studios and 5-Hour Energy Performance Zone. If you'd like to talk to Humble and Fred, call 1-855-662-4743. That's 1-855-ON-AIR-HF.
Ken Daniels from the Detroit Red Wings.
Woo-hoo. On the show today.
He doesn't play for them. He's the play-by-play man on Fox Sports Michigan, I think they call it.
Fox, eh?
Ken Daniels, play-by-play of the Detroit Red Wings on the show today. Herb Irving. Hello, Herb. Herb Irving is here. I must tell you. I don't know Herb Irving, but he's a comedian. Herb Irving.
Would he be a Jewish fellow?
I don't know, Fred.
Isn't Herb Irving, would that be a Jewish name?
Better be.
Better be, yeah.
Herb!
Herb!
If you're
it's a Middle Eastern dish, Herb Irving.
If you're not named, if your name is Herb Irving, and you're not Jewish, you better get down to the depot. Buy yourself some licensing. I don't really believe they're selling Jew licensing at the Home Depot, but for the purposes of that bit route, just for a second.
No, that's a provincial thing. you got to go to Service Ontario,
that's
for that.
Service, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I renew my Jew license every time I get my new sticker on my plate.
Health card?
No. Just when every year when I renew my sticker, that's when I get my license.
Your OJIP.
My OJIP is funny. Also, Todd Shapiro is doing a little drop-in today on the show, the Todd Shapiro. Todd Shapiro from the Todd Shapiro Show. The eponymously named Todd Shapiro Show. You know what that means?
Nope.
I got that word from John Moore. John Moore says it all the time. He says, what it means is our show, the Humble and Fred Show, is named after Humble and Fred. So it means, eponymously means to be named after that person.
Nothing like using words your audience doesn't understand.
I know. It's funny because when he used that word, I had to go look it up.
I don't get that. Like 99% of the people walking out there, probably more, 99 point something.
Seven. No. Well, listen, if I didn't know the word,
exactly,
then nobody does. That's right. So I just made that brag.
When he throws that word out, would he then stop down and explain what it means? Well, that's not very good communication.
Eponymous, the actual definition of a person giving their name to something. So basically what I just said.
Well, you know what? You know the key to broadcasting, too, as you know.
I don't know the key to broadcasting because I'm sitting here with you.
The best.
I mean, look at us. Yeah. Do I know the key? No.
The best, you know, between point A and point B, the best way to get there is a straight line. So when I'm there and I'm talking to my audience and I throw that word out, they're spending the next couple of seconds going, what the fuck does that mean? While you continue to talk and they're not listening.
I know.
Figure it out.
I just did.
Well.
If you go back, the whole thing, I just said, well, I figured it out completely.
I know. But I'm throwing the figure it out there as a kidding.
I know you're not throwing it out there as a not kidding. I remember getting to work one morning because you and I were, you know, do you remember when you and I used to be just the darling of the media world?
No.
Wait a minute. You weren't there when we were the media darlings?
No.
Well, we were.
Were we?
Jesus.
Do you really think so?
Yes.
Okay.
We went through a really
What month was that? Month and year, please.
You know what? Mm-hmm. 2012 until well into 2015.
Oh, you mean, I get it, right.
When we were the media darlings. For a while there, we were on The Fan every week. We were being asked to be part of roundtables here. We were doing remote morning shows there. For a while, we were the morning we were the show on midnight on 1010. Every morning, we were the featured guests on the John Moore Show. Remember those days when we were media darlings?
Had to be here half an hour earlier.
How'd we blow that?
Well, because that straight line between A and B, we diverted to P for poo.
Hippopotamus.
Hey, Humble and Fred, you guys do some really interesting topics, and you know, every once in a while, you show us your intellect, and then the other times you just go poo jokes.
You know, poo through my pee hole is not a 10-10 thing.
You know, that's
anyway.
It's just interesting. It's a funny country, as we've said many times. When you look back. I mean, that comedy station's still there in Hamilton. I think they shut the one down in London, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But this show could still be on there. Canadian content.
Oh, no, it was a six-week rush to get us off the air.
Canadian content, local.
Yeah.
Local references and stuff, but...
Anyway. No, I know. So, one morning on the way into being media darlings, one morning, I heard John Moore use that. He called, he was talking about Jim Richards, I think, and he said the eponymously named Jim Richards Show.
Right.
And the entire way, it's what you just described. And by the way, I'm being serious.
Mm-hmm.
The entire way there, I just kept thinking, I don't know what the fuck that means. And I read a lot of books. I kept thinking, well.
And you
I love words.
You love words, yeah.
So I'm all the way, and it's a great point you made about broadcasting, that if you say that word, and you don't say, well, what it means is this. Mm. It's like a fancy way of saying something named after yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm driving in. And I actually sent him a note when we got in. I go, dude, I looked it up. And I'm like.
Oh, did you?
Why is it sent? Like, I had saying, hey, when you, as a joke, saying, you know, you got me. I had no idea what that meant. But now I do.
And now I do.
And now
not that I will ever use it.
You know, but it's funny you say that. Most people will never use most of the words that I find fascinating, but they are great words. And now if you ever heard that, whether it was being said on the news or something in a reference in a movie, you'd go, oh, I know what that
Howie.
Word means.
Howie.
I'm
sitting here right now. I forget what the word was.
Hippopotamus.
Hippononymous. It's, you know, it's anonymous about it yourself.
Anonpotist.
Okay, we'll walk out of here not knowing what that word... You know, the thing is, you have to be part of that club to be throwing those words around.
Mm-hmm. What club is that?
Well, the club that, you know...
The big word club?
When I was in high school at Stephen Leacock Collegiate Institute, there were two English teachers, Mr. O'Regan and Mr. McPherson.
O'Regan.
And those guys, they belonged to the same club. They would always throw those words at each other, and it was fun to listen to because they understood each other.
Right.
And then if you wanted to stop down and say, wait a minute, what does that word mean? And again, I forget half the words they explained to me. But see, they were part of the same club. They could throw them back and forth and know what they meant. And what I'm saying is, maybe they should have a radio station that, you know, is the word club.
So they do.
You can tune in and hear these words and know what they mean.
You know what the name of that station is?
What?
CBC. It's true in a way. I mean, they definitely speak at a, you know... different level of word use than you would hear, say, on Virgin Radio.
I understand, but how do you, when you're just, you know, when you're broadcasting basically to the masses and you've got a mind to, you know, what the profile is of that audience, why would you even think about throwing a word out there that you know most of the audience wouldn't understand? Why not just say, hey, the show is named after the guy?
Well, I guess
it takes what, 1.5 more seconds?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I guess the short answer would be if you're reading an editorial in the New York Times or the Toronto Star or the Globe and Mail, they're going to use words that, you know, are best, that they think are best describing a situation, and you might not know every word in that
article.
Yeah,
but that's different.
No, the Toronto Star or the CBC are of a similar audience,
no,
I would think.
What I'm saying is if you're reading the Toronto Star and the New York Times and you see one of those words, you can stop down and actually investigate it while you're, you know, when words are coming out of the radio and the word comes out and you're preoccupied with it, for a second. Like, you know, it's two different media. They're two different mediums, you understand?
Oh, yes, yes. Different interpretations.
I got to tell you.
You understand that?
I had no idea you knew this much about broadcasting. When you go from A... See, the thing is... the thing is, Fred... What happened to Cosby? Why aren't we talking about him anymore? Isn't it funny? You know, Donald Trump has replaced all, like, all nefarious people of notoriety that were all fucked up in the last couple years. They're just like, it's a free ride for them.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like the premier of this province.
Mm-hmm. Like the premier of this province.
I digress, because most people don't care. It's not sexy enough. But the Cosby...
The Cosby.
Yeah. You heard last week, eh?
I heard something. What was the noise?
The jury will be selected from outside the jurisdiction.
Right, because they can't. His lawyers don't believe he can get a fair trial in that jurisdiction, which is, by the way, where, Frederick?
I don't know.
Is it somewhere in the States, obviously.
Definitely in California.
No, it's Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania.
That's what I thought. I knew it was close to here.
Oh, yeah, because he's... Yeah.
We should take a... Hey, Phil. Phil, we should do... Phil?
Hello?
We should do a road trip to Pennsylvania, eh? Where we go see Bill Cosby's trial.
Oh, why not?
Then they're allowing just one of 13 witnesses, which was a peculiar decision by the judge because they had 13 women lined up to say, hey, he's assaulted me.
He's being tried around Philadelphia.
Right, so they...
That's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
So the judge came back and said, no, I'm only going to allow one of those. We'll get the point. So apparently that works to Cosby's benefit. But the thing is with Bill Cosby, it doesn't even matter. You know what I mean? For the sake of the women, you would like to see him convicted.
Yeah.
But as far as punishment, he's already received. Like, he's destroyed.
But excuse me, this trial in the Philadelphia area.
Around there.
For the Toronto, Toronto woman.
This is the Toronto woman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Are any of those other ridiculous date rapes going to be ever brought to trial? Or
no, because the charges deal with this specific one.
And this is the only one where there are charges brought. Okay. All right.
Which is good enough, because when you're Cosby's age, he gets 10 years, he's going to die in prison. So
he's not going to prison.
He could, but he probably
won't. You're saying, oh, the possibility, for sure.
Oh, yeah, 10 years or something.
Yeah, but I don't think he's going to prison.
No, probably not. He's got money.
Here's the eponymously named theme song to the eponymously named Bill Cosby show. This is where he stands. I love this theme. Remember the Cosby show where he stood there and all the kids would dance with him and he would dance in his funny dad sweater? I'm doing the thing with the thing.
Lisa Rashad.
With the raping and the date rapes. Ooh.
Creep.
Oh, yeah. Now that's what he is now. He's just that guy. The guy that did the date raping.
And what he, you know, it's so far reaching because that show has been wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
Nobody runs it.
Well, except for those sub-channels in the States. I saw that, actually, while I was down there.
Oh, I haven't.
But you have to really bury into the channels to see it.
Say that, Phil. You saw Cosby on TV?
Yeah, one of the sub-channels that...
Americans.
Yeah, that means that, you know, when you're watching an antenna television in the U.S., they have separate channels for certain programs.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay.
So,
but
it's buried in.
You know, a lot of the... You know, a lot of networks run... Or affiliates run sitcoms, you know, at 4 or 5 in the afternoon. All that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And you think if any of those people had royalty deals on that show, he's totally destroyed them, too.
Fair enough, but they probably have had... Anyone who had royalty deals on that show has been making some good bank for about 30 years.
No, I know, but it stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still money. You know what I mean? Because that show was so wholesome, so family.
Oh, you're saying it could have run for the rest of time? Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
And even if, you know, Jamal or whatever his name. What's his name? Jamal?
Did you say some of my mama's son?
The guy that played the oldest son?
Macaulay Culkin?
I know who you're talking about.
Jamal Weber?
The thing is, given his age.
Yeah, he would be making bank forever.
Oh, yeah.
I know. But you know what? I appreciate what you're saying. I don't feel as sorry for them as, say, all the people what got raped.
Right.
Well, yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. I'm just saying his actions have...
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, for NBC, you still own pieces. Like, on and on and on and on. He has screwed a lot of people. both you know, literally and figuratively.
You know, funny, I just while I was finding that theme song and watching the opening credits to The Cosby Show, you know, he was at one time as popular as any figure in the 80s. That guy was one of the most famous. First of all, he had always been famous, but one of the most popular figures in culture. And to think about where he was there to what it is now, it's just it's quite the turnaround. I mean, it's there are only a few people in our lifetimes that have had that kind of arc where you go from being the most famous and most beloved to being most despised. And as you say, wiped almost any record, recorded television record of this guy. I guarantee you TV shows that have reruns where he might have been a guest on it or those are all gone now, too.
No, like, I know.
If he ever did an episode of Match Game, they would not show that.
And you know what's interesting?
Yeah.
Based on the system, innocent until proven guilty. You know, because he hasn't been convicted of anything. It's all on image and hearsay and accusations, which is odd. You know what I mean? Like, but nobody in this situation, because people usually scream that, hey, innocent until proven guilty. Like, he hasn't been charged with anything, or he hasn't been convicted of anything. But this is a whole different ballgame. Everybody's totally bought into, like...
Yeah, there's nobody out there
destroying
going,
him.
No one. You haven't heard any noise from anybody for a while going, well, this is outrageous. Mr. Cosby is completely innocent of these charges, and we will prove that in court in Pennsylvania, Amish country.
Felicia Rashad did, and she sounded like an idiot.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
But you'd think, as you pointed out, in a lot of situations like this, there would be somebody going, you know, hey, guys, come on, guys. I hear people say that a lot lately, too. Hey, guys, come on, guys.
You know, it's pathetic.
Let's calm down, guys.
And the thing is, it's not even like... it's such a low form of humanity to drug the women and then do it to them. You piece of shit. No, sir, like, just horrible.
And what I read recently about it... Because all, you know, people, I hate when people do this. When somebody is victimized and they start doing, like, why didn't the victim come forward? Why don't you come forward? Why don't you get violated? And then, you know, but a lot of these women that were violated slash raped, you know, they didn't come forward because he was the most, the biggest figure in Hollywood at the time. For a good number of years in the 80s, this guy was the most famous person in the world, almost. And what is a woman supposed to do? In fact, I read something where a woman said, I didn't think it was going to be good for my career to come out and accuse America's dad. And some of these women were black women.
And
thinking,
and they're embarrassed.
And they were, no, but I'm saying the fact that I mentioned they were black is they thought,
oh,
first of all, this isn't good for me. And in a way, is this good for, you know, the experience? And we here we have the most popular guy. And it's so weird because in the 80s, Bill Cosby was like the most popular black person in the country.
Right, he was the
until
TV dad.
Obama came along, you know, 20 years later. But Cosby was, it was a weird time in the 80s there with Bill Cosby.
Well, you know, I mean, we had VCRs to record the show on, what was it, on a Thursday night that it ran?
NBC, that's where Thursday night began. And you think about it, the 80s were Reagan and George Bush. We had 12 years. 12 years of a conservative presidency sort of balanced by this incredibly liberal, upscale New York doctor who was black and the whole country loved him. And now he's a despicable pig.
But it was appointment, like people built their Thursday nights. You don't have to do that anymore, right? You don't have to build any night around a show.
No, you don't.
But there, it was like, I remember the whole Seinfeld thing. It was Thursday night. Yeah, you could record it, but there was just something about watching it as it happened on a Thursday night.
Before Seinfeld, though, there was Cosby Cheers and Friends and all that stuff that happened on Thursday night. And that Seinfeld sort of squeezed in there. But
right, was Friends on before
Around the same time, I would say.
Because I remember that 1-2 punch.
And then Frasier was in there, so it was Cosby, Cheers, Frasier, Friends, Seinfeld. All those were Thursday night shows. In the early 2000s, that Thursday night slot was taken over by, I think, The Office was a Thursday night show. I saw, but you're right. I mean, no one, people stopped caring about appointment television some, you know, in the last 10 or 15 years.
I don't know when the last time is. I couldn't tell you the last time I watched a network show other than sports. Like, what do they call these things? Ryan's Hope and Chicago Fire and, like, all these things that you see ads for all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, people actually do that, eh? They sit in front of the television and they watch an hour show with commercial breaks and everything. It just blows my mind.
No, I don't get it.
It's been years since I've done that.
I have. I just changed my PVR a week ago because I have a couple older ones that I've owned, and the hard drive on the one that I was using is starting to... I mean, I guess I could get it repaired. My point is I changed PVRs, and so I had to reset up. The only thing I tape, there's two things I tape. One is a show called Modern Family, because I think it's really funny. I don't think I've ever seen it on a Wednesday. I think it's on Wednesday nights, but I've never seen it on a Wednesday night. And then there's this guy, like, from the golf world named David Faraday, who he's a commentator, an announcer or whatever, but he also has an interview show. So his new season started last night, and I taped an hour of him and Phil Mickelson talking about golf. But that's the only network stuff that's on there. Everything I don't even have. In fact, it's funny because at one time when PVRs came out, I remember. Do you remember this? Where you had to, it got so loaded up, you had to delete some stuff you'd saved.
Yes,
I don't do that anymore. I'm not taping anything.
I have one. I never use it for that reason. It's like,
but you did use it at one time.
Not really. I never. Really? No, I just. But again, I've never been that type of guy that had his shows on. I don't know. I just, the thing is about a PVR, the only thing I'd use it for now is sports, and I'm not going to tape a sporting event because I can just watch the highlights. I'm not going to tape any shows. None.
Well, I told you what I do with golf. I'll tape I'll tape it as it starts. I'll put it on, like, if it starts at 2, right. I won't start watching it until 2:30. Then I never have to see a commercial.
Yeah, I don't know. It's you know, yesterday on my walk, too, I was, first of all, I was listening, as I do most afternoons, to Bob McCowan on The Fan, and they were talking to a guy out of Boston, I forget what his name, he's an old guy, and he's just started his own podcast, and it's funny to hear those guys talk about podcasts, because when you think about it now, like even 5 years ago, the three guys talking about it would not, maybe McCowan had an idea, but you wouldn't talk about...
Let him know.
They wouldn't have the conversation they did yesterday. And it was still a little awkward because they weren't quite sure of what it's all about and the impact they're going to have. And then I thought that's interesting because I went on my walk then, and then I had a choice between listening to the Fan 590 or Howard Stern's interview from a year ago with Conan O'Brien. And I thought, on this walk, what is going to get me through the walk quicker?
What'd you choose?
And hold my... The interview with Conan O'Brien. It's over. Yeah. It's over a year long, or a year old. You know. So,
but it was brand new to you yesterday.
It was brand new to me yesterday, and it was just. And then I'm thinking of these guys, and I'm thinking, hey guys, this is the impact.
Yeah.
I'm listening to this instead of you. I really like you, but when I have to make a decision here on how I'm going to be entertained for the next hour walking.
Yeah.
I didn't choose you. You know. So.
And that really is a sort of encapsulates why podcasts were a great idea and why they're taking off now is just that. I mean, I've listened back to some stuff that Alec Baldwin did. One of my best examples is he interviewed Billy Joel years ago now, like 2 or 3 years ago. And I, on my way to Palm Springs, I was dicking around with my phone and I had... archive some podcasts. I had some Marc Maron stuff, and I saw this. I had archived this interview with Billy Joel. No, even though I'd heard it before, like a TV show that I enjoyed, I decided to listen to it again. It was on my phone.
Yeah.
And as much as you like McCowan, you had the option to listen to a Conan O'Brien interview, completely no commercials, uncluttered. And that's how you get that choice in entertainment that you didn't have 10 years ago.
And you know how your mind works. If the Leafs were doing well, maybe I'd have chosen McCowan because I thought, oh, I'm going to listen to talking about the Leafs and it's all feel good. But because it's all so negative right now, it's like, I can't be buying. You know, I'll go this way. And again, the point being, I had the choice that a few years ago I wouldn't have.
If you have the SiriusXM app, and if you don't, you should. If you're a SiriusXM subscriber, it really is something else. Whenever I don't go on it a lot, but I'm reminded about how much choice you have. And we'd been talking about Stern interviewing Mellencamp. And I was like, yeah, yesterday, my entertainment in the car all the way up to Where was I yesterday? What do they call it? It's not Forks of the Credit, is it? It's
yeah.
Is that where I was?
Terracotta?
No, no. Yeah, I was more just a Credit View old school, just north of you.
Bell Fountain?
Yeah. So mm-hmm. on the way there, on the way back, I listened to Mellencamp being interviewed by Stern.
Mm-hmm.
No commercials, nothing to interrupt it. And it just, it was as simple as just going to the archives on Sirius XM. Actually, it's great. It's even, they've got it set up so well. All you do is go to Howard Stern Interviews, and there you are. Now, we're on the app as well, aren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we are.
On demand, any one of our shows. It's good. It's good for the Humble and the Fred as well.
Excellent.
But you talk, you know, talk radio on terrestrial radio now is interesting because in Canada they're onto this thing where you have to switch subjects every 20 minutes or something. So you really can't get into anything the way you might want to sink your teeth into it. And they do it for, there's some valid reasons why they do that.
Yeah.
Because listeners aren't in their car more than whatever. Mm-hmm. But you never get like you got from that Mellencamp, that like an hour of in-depth, relaxed, tell me what I don't know type of radio.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a changing, and it's a changing quickly.
Well, the first 20 minutes of Stern talking to Mellencamp, you know, while it was cool, it was, you know, it took him a while to get warmed up. But you always find out stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the guy was on for like an hour and 20 minutes, but you always find out stuff.
Right.
That you wouldn't get if it was a mm-hmm. five-minute experience.
Mm-hmm.
How much time does Ken Daniels have to spend here in the Humble and Fred studios?
6 hours.
Come on over here, my friend.
So here's a guy, you talk about podcasts, when he's traveling with the Detroit Red Wings, guess what he listens to from time to time?
Bob McCowan.
No, the Humble and Fred podcast.
Hello, how are you?
How are you, my friend?
Kenny, how are you, pal?
Freddie, some headphones
nice
on there.
Nice seeing you.
For the last 20 years, our guest this morning has been the voice of reason. He's been the voice of the one of the winningest franchises, certainly in the last quarter century, maybe of all time. And I've got so many questions about this Detroit Red Wing hockey team. This Del Vecchio kid, has he got a shot?
He does. Yeah, if you're playing in a 70 and over league.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right, please welcome Ken Daniels, everybody. I'm about to check. I'm about to change. You don't have to have those on. I don't know what kind of broadcaster you are.
By the way, I brought you donuts. It's morning radio.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Oh,
I'm used to that.
Do we look like guys?
No, I don't eat them either.
Yeah. Phil, you like a donut?
You know, it's a pleasure for me to meet Phil.
Look at him. Look at that face.
Seriously. Since you guys started this, and I've been not 100%er, I got to say.
That's all right.
In the beginning, I was. You broke the thing, Phil.
Hold on. Yeah, just let me do that. Phil, honest to God, this is so embarrassing, Mr. Daniels.
No, it's all right.
You know,
okay. That sounds great.
There you go, sir. Please
works.
Can you please can yeah. This, you know, isn't it funny because Ken was about to say some breakout stuff.
What,
and of
what
course,
I was about to say was I listened to you guys since day one, and I thought you were so far ahead of the curve when you guys were doing it. I was so happy for you, and I would I'd go jogging and I'd put you guys on, download the podcast, and now during summertime when I have too much time off for my liking because I can only golf so much. I know you could golf every day.
I golf occasionally, Ken.
Yeah,
just occasionally.
That's right. But I couldn't keep up with you. But, you know, when I'm not golfing, I'm sitting on my back deck and just listening to podcasts. I listen to a lot of them. And you guys from the beginning were ahead of where everybody else was.
And why did you listen to this one, Ken? Because you knew us. It was from where you grew up.
Yeah,
and
it was. And I still listen to a lot of Toronto stuff, even in Detroit. And you'll get, I find during hockey season, too, I'll get a lot more hockey news on podcasts that I can listen to, whether, mm-hmm. you know, just afternoon shows here, morning shows here, download them, listen the next day, have them in my car. They come up on my iPhone. So if I download them at home, they'll download automatically. I get in my car, put it on media, the car,
yeah.
and I just play what I want.
Yeah.
So you're not using internet at that point. It's already on your phone. So it's easy. And you guys are a big part of that.
You know, one of the things we used to talk about in the early days when we were pioneers, we used to, you know, we thought that the holy grail was going to be when you can stream the internet in your car. And we used to have this, we'd say on the day that happens, everything will change And it'll sort of leave everything that preceded it behind. But in actual fact, now what you just described is the interim step,
yeah.
Which is now it comes up so easily in your media selection on your car, whatever that area is called now. It's not your radio anymore.
It's under your source, whatever it is.
Whatever. Yeah. But now it's that step between it's streaming. It's just everyone has it on their phone and it comes up so easily.
Well, the thing is, though, if your phone is hooked up through your media, your phone can stream. So we're already there, really. Yeah. But why would you use the data if you don't have
to? You don't have to use the data. And you know what? And I was paying up to a couple of years ago. I had internet in my car.
Mm-hmm. Did you really?
Yeah. And I could listen through iTunes radio if I wanted to listen to a show live. I could do that. And then it would sometimes be hit and miss. So I just dropped it. And now I just download the podcast I need at home on my phone. Uh-huh. And I get in the car and I listen to them. So generally, even if I drive down to the Joe at 5 o'clock and there's a show on the or a podcast came in, or you guys, you know, you download it. You guys are pretty quick actually. Mm-hmm. When your podcast comes
yeah on. It's pretty quick.
It is.
Yeah.
So if I like your life, so if I wanted to download it, I could at 3 and be in my car and just listen to something an hour behind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, we were talking just before you came in about again the how different people use television now, and it's similar to what's happening to podcasting, what's happened to radio is what happened when television went from 5 channels to 500. If you're interested in the Humble and Fred Show, you can listen to it whenever you want to, and conversely, if you're interested in fishing, it's there as well. But sports, yeah. What you do is one of the few things that people aren't time shifting. They're not delaying it. Is it interesting that all the years you've been in television, I mean, now you're really in the last bastion of people listening, watching TV live or listening to things live.
Right, for sure. And programming like live sporting events like our games, our Red Wing games on Fox Sports Detroit for advertisers, it's the one thing where people really aren't fast-forwarding. Unless you're really careful, and I will digress and tell you the story because it happened with Mickey Redmond, who's been my best friend and analyst for 20 years on Fox Sports Detroit. Right, and I love them. And I've done some NBC games over the years, national games. I've been there over 20 years. And there was an NBC game I was going to watch my daughter in a dancing competition. Oh boy, those are long, aren't they? Like it's a full day. At any rate, I think it started.
I think
7
the words months. "Daughter in dancing competition." Just how long is that going to be?
I know it was a long time. Anyway, the Red Wings were on NBC, and it was like 2 o'clock. I finally got out of there at 4, and Mickey calls me as I'm in the car on the way home, and I said, "Do me a favor. I'm recording the game on TiVo at home. Don't tell me the score of the game," because I knew it probably hadn't ended yet. He goes, "Okay, no problem." So we're talking and change subjects and whatever. He says, "Shit, really a bummer that Cronwall got hurt in overtime." I said, "Well, there goes that game." And then I get home and I'm just fast-forwarding the damn thing. Right. Now, I would have watched. You would have fast-forwarded through commercials in that time. But generally, live programming, as we find, is the one people won't, as you say, time shift. And when I go on the road, because I do so much traveling on Redbird, our team plane, is when I'm home and I watch so many shows, whether it be Netflix or network television or HBO or Showtime, I'll download them onto my iPad from TiVo. And it's a great streaming. TiVo's wonderful that way, and I can just download them right there, and I'll watch them on the plane.
Do we have that here, TiVo, in Canada?
Yeah. Well, TiVo's basically we don't have TiVo. We have the availability of PVRing something.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I can't download something off my.
Oh no, it's not that much synchronization with your computer equipment. That's for sure.
Okay. Phil.
Although you know
what Phil is.
I know. It's great to see Phil, seriously, after all these years, and you
look
making,
at him.
Making fun of him daily.
No.
I know.
No.
No?
That's
you
no,
don't?
No, making fun with Phil.
With Phil.
You know, obviously, that Phil's...
You take it, Phil, better than anyone. And I'm not talking about Muse here. I'm just saying you take it better than anybody.
You're too kind.
And Phil, as you know, Ken, Phil's expecting the arrival of his beloved Pearl.
Oh.
Now we have some tentative dates in May, so we're pretty excited about that.
Can't
now we'll need a play-by-play announcer.
All right, I'm in.
Yes, you will.
I lost that overtime.
I have no idea what that meant. You know, it's weird because I've known Ken's brother for so long. Very great actor, Jeff Daniels. Enjoy his work.
Yes. Dumb and Dumber. That's us. Yeah.
What is your brother's name?
Gary.
Gary.
Yeah. Gary and Calgary. Yeah.
Gary and Calgary. Gary was my lawyer like in 1982 or 3 or 4, one of those years. Did you start out west? Where did you start?
No, I started in Toronto. I started in Oshawa. And then to Oshawa.
Oshawa Generals?
No, Oshawa radio station, CKR, CKQT, Music on the Quiet Side.
Nice.
CKR, AM Motor City, and now I'm in the Motor City of Detroit. I've worked in two Motor Cities.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
The Schwa and there. Motown.
Yeah.
I remember back in the early 80s, I was the sports director at CFNY, and one day this big envelope landed on my desk. And I thought, oh, what's that? And I opened it up, and it was a resume from Ken Daniels with a big glossy picture.
Oh.
When you were working.
Did I have a porno mustache?
No.
I think he did.
And it's funny, because I thought that. I thought, wow, this is a nice presentation. There was no job. And then there was a lasting impression, and then to watch your career ascend from there was quite fascinating.
Yeah, believe me, Ken, he did you a favor by not hiring you.
Yeah.
Maybe. It all worked out okay.
Yeah, because... So you were at CBC, too, right? You actually did Hockey Night Canada. You were a part-time Hockey Night Canada guy, too.
Yeah, I had started in Oshawa, political beat, and then doing the news for about 1 year. Then Larry Silver, great guy, was at CFTR for a lot of years.
Mm-hmm.
And he hired me to do overnights at CJCL, which was becoming Metro 1430,
right.
All news and talk before it mm-hmm. became Music of Your Grandmother's Life. So it was before that. I've been through so many changes there. And then I was actually a City Hall reporter. Now, I wish Ford was there when I was there. That would have been a blast. But he wasn't. So I actually had an office in City Hall as a City Hall reporter. But the key in this business, as you guys know, is versatility. And I could do anything. And if they needed a sportscaster, they needed a fill-in guy, I could do it. I did color filling in on my first game doing color on Maple Leafs Radio with Joe Bowen was 1984. After I'd been at the station 3 years, they needed a fill-in guy. I mean, I played hockey. I was probably awful. I actually haven't listened to the tape yet. I still haven't listened. And it was at Joe Louis Arena, where I am now. So crazy. 1984, that was my first game of color. And then I worked there until 85 and left there to go to CBC.
Wow. And what years? So you say you've been doing you're the voice of the Detroit Red Wings for 20 years. What was the sort of chronology? You just said, because most people would assume that sportscasters, Fred, you guys were just like super into sports as a kid. But you, it sounds to me like it sort of was something you kind of liked. Did you think that was going to be what you were going to do?
Oh, from the age of 10.
Really?
Yeah, I was 10 years old. And I wrote Brian Williams a letter when I was 17. The Brian Williams in Canada, Brian Williams.
Brian Williams.
Not the one making up stuff
Brian
in the U.S.
Williams.
No.
Yeah.
Brian Williams in Canada. Wrote him a letter at 17, and he called me at home. And I was...
what a guy.
Yeah, and I wrote him a letter if I could come down and watch him do the sports. And he called me, and my mother said, Brian Williams is on the phone.
Wow.
And I was so nervous. And I went down to watch Brian do sports a few times. I mean, how is he really going to help a 17-year-old kid other than inspiring me to keep going?
Yeah.
And so I went, I watched him do the sports, and I'd call him every month or so, probably driving him crazy. Long story short, as it happens years later, and I get hired by CBC only because I'm at home, a bachelor, 1985, no food at home, and I decided I'm going to go to the Blue Jays game because I had a media pass. Mm-hmm. All I had at home were Twinkies.
Yeah.
So I had nothing else. I went and ate, and Don Martin from CBC was there, and I'd met him at some news conferences, like I see you out, right, at Sporting Things, Fred?
Yeah.
And I see Don, and he said, what are you doing this summer? And I said, well, working, radio, whatever. And he said, we're looking for a summer replacement for me. I'm going to the Canada Summer Games. I said, on TV? He said, yeah. He said, weekends. So yeah. He said, call Howard Bernstein on Monday. I said, I've called that guy. He never returns my call. Howard, as it turns out, a great guy. Monday I called. I went and auditioned with another guy who came in from Montreal over a couple weekends live, first time ever on television. Got the job. That's how I wound up at CBC. So as I always say, was I lucky or was I just hungry? You know, but I think really there's no... People say you're so lucky to do what you do, and I always like to say to them, luck is really just preparation that meets opportunity. You go through your life and you're preparing for what you want to do. When the opportunity arises, you may be at the right place at the right time, like I was lucky to run into Don Martin.
Mm-hmm.
But if I hadn't prepared for that moment, thinking of that opportunity, doing everything I had done up to that point, it wouldn't have mattered if I ran into Don Martin. If I couldn't do it, I wouldn't get the job.
You know what, Ken? Over the years, that's the one thing that's bothered me. Because even Even sometimes relatives say that. Oh, but you're lucky. You were so lucky. You were, you know. Oh,
you worked your ass off. That's what you did.
It must be great not to really have to work all your life. That's basically the attitude. Mm-hmm. And that's always rubbed me the wrong way, too. It's like, well, what do you mean lucky? Yeah, like I was the guy that got up at 4:30 in the morning and took the bus down to CKFH to make $2 an hour. A lot of people, found with interns now, a lot of people not willing to do that.
Mm-hmm. That
well,
amazing?
You paid the price. I paid the price. And
yeah,
it's not so much luck as you say. It's things meeting.
I would have done anything to be in this business. And when I got the job in Oshawa, Mark Orton, who was the program director, and it's just funny how you get names of people like Jeff Hansel, I grew up listening to on Chum FM. Jeff Hansel said, why don't you call John Hinnan at CFTR? And Jeff was a brother-in-law of a great friend of mine, Sharon. So I said, okay, and I called John Hinnan. I got nothing for you. Why don't you call Rayfield White at CFOR in Orillia? Rayfield had nothing. So why don't you call Mark Orton in Oshawa? Mark Orton in Oshawa. He finally hires me. Mm. Because he said, you sold yourself. I had no experience.
Well, that's the thing. You know, oftentimes we recently talked about an intern that we've had. And Fred and I were thinking, you know, if we were ever given the opportunity at the stage of life this kid is to sit in on a show and get some stuff on the air, like, I hung around radio stations for 24 hours a day for years because I just loved it. And that's why I always laugh when people say, well, again, you're lucky you've never really had to work for a living. I go, I know it seems like it's not work, but it's something that's been our passion for as long as I can remember.
Even as I've said to a few of my friends, you know, that have worked for the city of Toronto and the Hydro and had union jobs basically for life. Yeah, you know. Part of my luck was spending 20 years really never knowing how secure my job was.
No, exactly.
You know, like at any given time, you could have been flushed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not easy,
And we had we didn't really have a typical, neither of us together or separately had a typical radio career. Because people always used to say that, oh, you guys get fired all the time. And we're like, no, we never got fired at all until 2006. Neither of us. And then people couldn't stop firing us. I'll tell you what, we got to take a quick break here. Ken Daniels hanging around for a little bit. I'm not sure how long, but when we come back, we'll continue to talk about play-by-play.
Yeah.
And call me on my cell phone. A pretty interesting story / probably the most terrific thing that can happen to anybody has happened to Mr. Daniels, and we're going to talk about it when we come back on Sirius XM Humble and Fred Radio around the world today. If you want to download the show, it's the Tuesday, March 7th file, humbleandfredradio.com. I know
when that hotline bling. Hi, I'm Simi Arif. I'm a comedian all the way from South Africa, and you're listening to Canada Laughs on Sirius XM.
Live on Sirius XM, kids, it's Humble and Fred Radio. Ken Daniels, the play-by-play voice, the voice of reason for a quarter century for the Detroit Red Wings, hanging in with Humble and Fred today. But Freddie, March is here soon. It's going to be taxes and things of that nature.
Go to retirementsherpa.ca and learn about the Retirement Sherpa program with Tim Niblett. Tim is a portfolio manager with 20 years of experience in the tax-effective financial planning business, and he's associated with Raymond James, a leading independent brokerage firm on both sides of the borders. Now, the Sherpa program helps you set up and identify measurable, important, enjoyable goals, having a plan, the right route, time-tested methodology, on and on and on. Tim Niblett is the guy that you want to talk to if you need help with your portfolio and your retirement plans. RetirementSherpa.ca. Oh, go there.
And the five-hour studios are sparkling this morning here on the Kingsway in Toronto. The
Queensway.
What did I say?
You said Kingsway.
I was on the Kingsway last night. I can't be held responsible. We're on the Queensway and 5 Hour Energy, of course, the magic elixir, Phil, that drives this program.
Mm-hmm.
Bananas. Apples, things, 4 calories, small bottle, big results. Ken Daniels is here. You know, I don't really follow the Detroit Red Wings. How's this Walt McKechnie kid? Is he having a good
Walt McKechnie?
Is he having a good season?
I don't think he ever played for the Wings, did he?
There's a name from the past. My goodness. Well, they may be able to use them this year. I've been there 20 years. I came after the first cup in 97, so I've been fortunate to be a part of 3 cups.
And did you actually, because I know sometimes it goes over to the network, Did you call the games when they won the cup?
Funny story, you should ask. No.
Funny story, you should ask.
Well, so, yeah, that's, you know what? About the most Hebrew thing anyone said this morning.
Because it's true, right?
Let me tell you a story.
Funny story, you should ask.
Because they go over to the networks, right?
They do. They go to the network. We used to do the first two rounds.
Yeah.
Now we just do one round. And this year I'm going to do no rounds for the first time. Because I've been there 20 years. The first time we missed the playoffs now in 26 years.
Jeez.
So, that aside, the only Stanley Cup final I got to call was 2008 because Ken Cal, our radio guy, there's a lot of Kens around there. Ken Holland, our GM, Ken Cal, our radio guy. He gets called Ken Daniels. I get called Ken Cal. I also get called Ken Holland, to which I tell our GM the story. I get called Ken Holland all the time, and I tell people you're missing it by about $2 million.
Yeah.
Ken Holland says, I think you'd be closer to four.
Yeah.
I go, okay, I'll buy that. At any rate.
What is that all about?
I know. It just is. That's the nature of the beast. Right. So, he takes all the heat, too. You know, great GM, but he takes the heat, too, in not-so-good times. So, in 2008, I'm working for Fox 2 over the air because it's Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final in Pittsburgh. So I'm going to do it from the studio back in Detroit that night. I get a call from the radio station in Detroit. Ken Cal has lost his voice. And I call him Schlepprock because if anything bad can happen, it happens to him. Mm-hmm. He even went to church that morning in Pittsburgh praying to get his voice back. God wasn't listening.
Hard to believe.
I know. Isn't it something?
God's not a pharmacist.
So at any rate, I get on the plane because the Red Wings were flying a private plane for the families to go down at 5 o'clock or so. So I get there at 6. The game's starting just after 7. I get to the rink. I'm not sure where I'm going now at the Igloo in Pittsburgh, and I'm sort of panicked here. I'm rushed. I'm filling in for Cal for the game. I run into Colin Campbell, who's vice president of operations for the National Hockey League and the guy handing out punishment at the time and everything else. I run into Colin, and I said, Colin, I'm not really sure where I'm going. He said, don't worry. We're in Pittsburgh. I've been scratched here so many times. I know how to get to the press box.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so he's leading me through a back way. I get up to the press box. I'm calling the game. I get through the game and I know it's not my place to call. The Detroit Red Wings have won the Stanley Cup. They're up 3-2 over Pittsburgh in the late going. And they went to a timeout and Paul Woods, the analyst, is talking and I took off my headset and I hit my mute button and Ken Cal is standing not far away because he's handing me all the promo cards during the game. And I said, Ken, he said, yeah. I said, put your headset on. You're calling the final 20 seconds. He said, no, I'm not. I said, yes, you are. He goes, I can't. I said, yes, you can. Suck it up. You're calling the final 20 seconds of the game. So he walked over, put his headset on, and now he's all nervous. And the puck came out to center ice, and I said, to bring home the Stanley Cup for the final 15 seconds. I wish it had been longer, but by the time I got to him, here's Ken Cal. And he calls it, and just as he's going to say the Detroit Red Wings win the Stanley Cup, Marian Hossa, then playing for Pittsburgh, slides a puck just past Chris Osgood, goes by the far side of the net, and I thought, oh my God, if this goes in, Schlepprock's going to be the biggest jinx in Stanley Cup history.
Yeah.
And the puck just went wide, and Ken said, and the Detroit Red Wings have won the Stanley Cup, and he got through it. It wasn't my place to call it. It was his. He's been a radio voice of the Wings now for 22 years, 2 years longer than me. So he got to call it. But just being part of Game 6 is a thrill for me. That's the only Stanley Cup final I will ever get to call, at least to that point. And Ken got the Stanley Cup call as he should have.
Well, that's a nice gesture on your point.
Oh, it had to be. There was no other way it should have.
What's that lifestyle like, a play-by-play guy? Like, here you are in Toronto, you're staying in hotels, like everything. Like, is it...
It's wonderful.
Is it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I just think of diet and like being unsettled and traveling all the time.
You know what? Diet was hard until I found a program called Isagenics that I love, and I can actually travel with it on the road.
I've got some shakes upstairs.
Do you?
Because
Isagenics? I've been on it since last June. I love it.
Because it would be easy to become a big fat fuck, eh?
I was.
All the different restaurants and shit, fast food.
And you look great, Howard. See, you do.
Thank you. I still have... You know, I didn't sign up to be a distributor. I was sort of dabbling in that for a bit, but I just get my stuff from them because it's convenient and the shakes are good. But I mean, we were talking this morning again about you're coming in, and so 41 road games is the regular.
I'd probably do 35 because summer NBC I don't travel, but yes.
So, and then the preseason, and then you don't do postseason. So how many days away do you figure you do in a year? 45
away? Well, you're there before, and I'm probably 90. I'm on the road,
so 90
to 100. 90 to 100.
And Fred asked a question. A lot of people, at first you think, well, whatever, it's great to be in hotels. But then if it becomes your job, it's not so great to be in hotels all the time.
I work out in hotels. Our crew at Fox Sports Detroit, great people. We have a lot of fun. We go out for dinners. And believe me, on the time when Scotty Bowman was there, and I went for dinner with Scotty and to watch games.
Wow.
We had a blast.
I mean,
to hang with him, he'd always say, his line would always be, what do you think? What do you think? And I knew Scotty didn't give a shit what I thought. But he wanted to hear from everybody else what their thought mm-hmm. process was. And that's how Scotty Rain Man took everything in. I learned so much from him and Mike Babcock and Jeff Blashill and Ken Holland. And before that, even when I was in Toronto doing Maple Leafs radio and you learned from Cliff Fletcher and Pat Burns, I mm-hmm. went to Forest Hill Collegiate and I played hockey for Mike Keenan. So to think of all the hockey minds that I've had the honor mm-hmm. to be around all the years, I mean, they've forgotten more than I'll ever know, but it's amazing.
Do you ever get feedback from some of these people? And it's odd because you work for the team and you have to be critical, or at least somewhat. You have to have some perspective on what's going on, good and bad. When you've been critical or said something to those guys, like, if you have a personal relationship with Scotty Bowman, does he look at you sometime and go, Ken, what the fuck, man?
He didn't. Funny, you'd hear stuff at the front of the plane that Scotty would say about the players, and he'd sort of put it out there. So I knew if he wasn't happy with someone, I would use it in the broadcast, but I would never use it. I think in that vein, and Mike Babcock the same way, you know what you can use and how you can frame something. Like, he'd be up there if Scotty were saying, so-and-so isn't, he's not getting on the power play, he's a lazy ass, he's not going to play 5-on-3, I'll show him. I would know doing the game, so-and-so is not going to get on the power play that night in a 5-on-3. So I would use it. I would never say that Scotty said that. You hear things. No one being critical, I don't think really we're that critical. We are the home mm-hmm. team broadcaster, and yeah. they can call us homers. Well, yeah, we're paid by the team. I'd like to see someone go into their place of work and criticize the boss to their face. I mean, how long are you going to be there? It right. just doesn't happen.
But being play-by-play, it's a good place to be because you don't really have to editorialize that much, right?
No, you don't. Yeah. You can throw things out there, and if we don't sugarcoat it, but mm-hmm. there is a way to say it,
yeah,
I suppose, and it's more for the analyst than mm-hmm. it is for me. But I think we're pretty honest. Mickey Redmond, Chris Osgood, they're right. pretty honest.
And you travel with the team on their
airplane
as well.
Travel with
which
the
is
team
great.
On
no
Red
stops.
Bird.
Everything is direct.
And mm-hmm. after games, we usually fly right out. We stayed in Vancouver, and the guys went out for their rookie team meal. Then we flew in. You go to Calgary, you go to Edmonton. Then we came here. Instead of going to Detroit to clear customs twice, we said, you know what? Mm-hmm. Let's come to Toronto for 2 days. So I got to see friends last night. I got to see my brother and my sister and other good friends of mine Sunday night. We all went for dinner. So those are rare times. We actually get a couple of days in a city. Next year, when now there's 31 teams in the league, there will be Vegas next season.
Mm-hmm.
I know Ken Holland has seen the schedule, and I said, did we get a night off in Vegas before? That's really key.
And
he said, I haven't checked that yet. And I said, well, would you mind doing that? I said, because I think the Vegas Golden Knights could go 41-0 at home. They could have the
yeah,
that's right.
They could have the best home record in the National Hockey mm-hmm. League. But that should be fun.
The voice of the Detroit Red Wings is hanging out with us. Ken Daniels has been a broadcaster for a long time. And, you know, we've got a lot of mutual history, a lot of common things, and Freddie and I were talking again before the show about your appearance and some of the things that have been going on in Ken's life. And 3 months ago today, you lost your son.
Yeah.
And being parents, you know, one of the things we discuss, and I'm sure a lot of people discuss with you, is like, I don't know how you do that. What happened? All the circumstances. I mean, can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, he passed in West Palm Beach. I was on, he was working for a law firm there, and I was in Winnipeg. Red Wings were playing in Winnipeg, and so 10:30 game ends in Winnipeg, or 10 o'clock, so it would be 11 o'clock in West Palm. And Jamie called me after the game, and he said, you wound up winning? And I said, yeah. He said, you guys were awful in the first, because he had Game Center Live, so he was watching the game. I said, yeah, what happened? So we're talking about the game, and he said, I pretty much finished doing the car. He had his car down there, and he was, you know, like painting it, and a guy he knew down there owned a body shop. He said, I can't take pictures now. It's too dark, but you're going to love it. And I joked. I said, no, I'm not. I'm going to hate it. But he said, no, you'll love it. You know, he's 23. And I said, no, I won't. Really, I won't. He said, no, you will. I'll take pictures when I get to work in the morning, but it's too dark now. I can't send them to you. He never woke up. That was that.
And do you know why?
Toxicology reports from there will tell you it's 3 to 4 months. It's 3 months today, so we're still waiting.
You know, it's similar to Aaron Davis's child, sort of have a seemingly healthy child, early 20s, went to sleep, never woke up. So when did you find out? That night you spoke to your son. The next day you're somewhere and you get a call that something has happened.
Well, I was somewhere. I was at home actually wrapping Christmas gifts, getting it done early because we were going on the road again. So we came back from Winnipeg that night, and that's Redbird, right? And the doorbell rang at 10:30, and a police officer was at the front door whom I didn't know from the Birmingham Police Department because I know a few of them and who are friends of mine. And they didn't want to come, which I can understand why.
Mm-hmm.
And
the guys you knew.
Yeah. And when I saw the police officer at the door, and it wasn't one that I knew, I thought, this is strange. And it wasn't the thought in my mind. And then he said, you're Ken Daniels. And I said, what happened? Because when someone asks you that question, and if you've ever hugged a police officer with a bulletproof vest on for a half an hour, it's a strange feeling. And I was home alone at the time, so he told me, and because the West Palm Beach, when they found him and couldn't wake him, they call his residence, because he was in my house when he was in Detroit and come back and forth. He was just in at Thanksgiving and was in September. So, you know.
It's every time my son travels a lot, every time he travels, and then my daughter with my two grandkids in their car, if they're on the 401, I'm always preoccupied with... It's an awful way to be, because I'm always thinking of worst-case scenarios. Like, what if something happens to them?
Yeah.
But to actually have that moment where somebody's telling you that...
It's like unimaginable.
I can't imagine that moment where it's actually, this is happening.
Maybe the harder part... And once I was through with him and I spoke with the police officers down there who were at the scene, and they were terrific. The hardest part was sitting for 3 hours not being able to tell his mother. Now my wife wasn't home and I called her. His mom wasn't home and the police officer's there with me, and he said, why don't you call her? I said, I won't get through that if I call her. And I texted and I said, are you home? And she said, no, what's wrong? Because we don't talk all the time, but we're okay, we're good. And I said, no, just in the area. And I had to wait because she was out till she got home. So that was 3 hours.
So you wanted to wait until you could do it in person.
I didn't want to tell her that over the phone.
You know, that's why I started this by saying, as parents, and I have two daughters, and it's funny because you might think, as Fred said, you might worry, you know, my daughter Charlie just came back from Florida on her own, but you worry, but never to that point. You never think that that's going to happen, especially because, you know, it's strange. Even though we're older now, you still think of your children as being, invincible because they're young.
Yeah.
So in the 3 months to this day that has been going on, I was thinking downstairs, like, how does Ken get up and go to work?
Good question. Because it's my passion, and without hockey, I don't know where I'd be. And if you love what you do, and this is the, believe me, hockey and my wife, Becca, and my daughter, Arlen, who's now in New Zealand on a study abroad in pre-vet, you know, and God bless her for still being able to go. And I think she needed this. She and Jamie were best friends, and she did his eulogy and amazed me how she got through that. I couldn't have done it, and she did, and shocked me, shocked all of us. And just the outpouring, there were more than 1,000 people at his funeral. And so much the Red Wings hockey world, and I heard from everybody in the hockey world. It's amazing. And, you know, I have to say this, and people and you guys reached out to me, and I heard what you guys said on the air, and it actually made me laugh when you were talking. You did. I mean, as sad as it was and what you guys said, you
probably
don't remember.
Well, we're only a couple sentences away at any given time from a poo joke.
Yes, I know
that's what we provide as a service
to
people.
I know that. And I knew, and a few days later, you had spoken of it. See, I do listen to you. So I will say to anyone in this situation, and most people who contacted me, either just reaching out, because I guess what I'm talking about, you made me laugh, was because our thoughts and our prayers, what are our prayers? And you made a joke about that. Are we really? What are your prayers? Yeah, I get that. But just for someone to reach out to you and say, our thoughts are with you.
Yep.
There are no words. You're right. There are no words. And some people don't know how to handle it. And those that didn't reach out to me, I am in by no means judging them, because no one knows how to handle it, and some people just don't know what to say. All I'm telling people is, if you're ever in this situation and it's anyone you know who passes or anything else, send them a text, send them an email, leave them a voicemail. There are no words. We don't know what to say. Thinking of you. It matters.
Yeah.
From someone who's been there, it matters. And that's all you got to do. You're not going to be able to say anything. It's going to make... But it does make you, it makes you feel, this is the hardest part 3 months from today. Going forward, and when we're going to miss the playoffs on April 9th, besides golf, and I have my beautiful wife, Becca, and my daughter, Arlen, will be back by then. We are going to get a dog. We're going to name him after Jamie. He's going to be called Jack. Jack Daniels just fits.
Yeah, it's
so
beautiful.
We are getting a dog, and that will help. So, you know, I don't know what to do then, but right now hockey has got me through.
Well, and you explained to me yesterday, there were a couple of people that you expected to hear from, and you didn't, which makes it that much harder.
Yeah, but I understand. I do understand they don't know what to do, and that's too bad. But I get it, and I'm.
Yeah, but
it's unfortunate. But I understand, because that's why I'm telling people: even if you don't know what to say, say something.
Yeah,
I know. But but even now, everybody leans on texting now. If you don't have the balls to say it,
that's okay.
Face to face, text it.
I must have had 300 texts that day.
Right,
and I read every one and I answered every one of them, because it was cathartic for me.
Right, and you, I mean, you have a decision to make. I mean, you could become ill over this. Right, so you decide that.
Thanks for that, Fred.
No, but I'm just saying you got to move forward, and you've taken the right attitude. I'm going to get absorbed in my work. This is what gives me pleasure. If you don't make that choice, it could go the other way.
It could,
and so you've taken like the healthy route.
Well, I've also talked with people, and Dave Schultz of the Globe and Mail lost his son Scott Oak, whose son Darcy is a fabulous illusionist now and world renowned, and tributes his show to Bruce. And Scott 6 years ago lost his son Bruce, and is doing a whole program now in Winnipeg and for an addiction center, and doing marvelous work. So, you know, it helps to have people who've lost their children to be able to talk to and go through it, no matter what manner it happened.
Right.
So many people, and Mickey and I did a speaking engagement, and two people came up to me there just a couple of weeks ago. One had lost his son just 3 months ago in a car crash. I mean, it's horrible, but
yeah, it's a pretty exclusive, shitty club to be
part of. It's a shitty club, but to talk with people helps.
But I kind of know what Fred's getting at. I mean, and I would say to you that 3 months isn't a very long time. I started that by asking you, how do you get up every day and do what you do? And you explained it. It's a passion, and it's cathartic, and you need it. But I'm going to tell you, and this is what I was having this conversation with a friend who lost his father recently, and I think it's important to say something, as you said, but to be honest as well. And what I said to him is what I'm going to say to you. 3 months isn't a very long time, and when the season ends and you don't have something to occupy yourself, that's when the real challenge is going to be. And I think, you know, I don't think it serves anybody to say, oh, it's going to be all right, because there will be some times that aren't going to be all right. And that's what I said to my friend last week. I said, you know, I've lost my dad, and I know what it's like. And I said, let me tell you, when people say you'll be fine, you won't.
No.
There will be times. But I said that's the key. Expect it. Understand it, and don't feel bad about it, because it's going to happen.
There will never.
I don't know if that's more bad news for you, but
it's. I like to look at Jamie. It's not the years of the life, but the life in the years, and that's how I'm choosing to look at him in his 23 years, and to see the hundreds and hundreds of kids from Michigan State who came to that funeral, and kids his age sobbing. And the people who were there, and the people who loved him, and the people he touched, and so many now have gotten tattoos with his initials. It's unbelievable. And you don't see that, and that makes me so proud of the type of kid that he was. And it will
I mean,
never,
it's amazing when you think about it.
It will never be the same, but that's what I say. That's when it gets harder. It's April, May, and June, July. You're right. And that's when it gets tougher, and you do a lot of...
And by the way, I don't bring that up to say, well, you know, better beware, but I think that it's... I think it's sort of incumbent on people to be honest, and especially both of us have lost all our parents now.
And I've lost both of mine. Yeah.
Well, when somebody goes through that, you know, it's like you have to go through it, is what I guess I'm trying to say.
And those moments, I guess you still have them. Where, like, I was like that with my dad. For a while after he died, I go, "Oh, I got to tell my dad about that." It's like, oh my God, he's gone. And again, you were pretty close with Jamie. And those moments, I guess you, especially with what you do, there must be those moments you'd think that this is when I'd be calling him or sharing this with him.
Yeah, after every game we talk. And, you know, I have a picture of him on my phone. And just in, it was around Thanksgiving when he was in. He was at the Joe with me. He was up in the booth. And we got a picture with Bob Cole. And that was really cool. I said, you got to get a picture with Bob and the three of us together. So that was neat. Mm-hmm. There's never a day that you don't think about it. And before he passed, he had gone because he was doing some legal work, say, for a law firm in West Palm. And when he didn't show up there for 2 days, and I asked the police officer, and I said, by the way, did you have his business card? Because I can't remember the firm name. Mm-hmm. Will you call them? Well, she had forgotten. Well, 2 days later, they were going to send him. He was never late for work.
Mm.
They were devastated. The flowers that they sent to the house for him and the candies and just the, and called up. And
wow.
They loved him there. And that's the type of kid he was. And I'd sent him some documents just before because I have a book coming out next fall.
Right.
And Jamie said, why don't you wait till your career is over? And I said, why? He said, so you can dump on people. Yeah. And I said, no, I can maybe do that 20 years. I'll have a whole other career. Hopefully, if I go as long as Coley is, I could be in my 80s. I'm only 57. Right. So, you know, we can keep going here. So I said, okay. And I sent some documents to Jamie, and he looked them over. And we're doing the book through Triumph Books, the publishing company. And I thought, okay. And I started it 3 weeks before Jamie passed. And then I stopped for about a month. Obviously. Then all of a sudden you realize, boy, the manuscript's due March the 1st. This is getting pretty quick for 80,000 words here. It was the best thing I could have done because all of it was with him in mind, and I'm telling stories. It's If These Walls Could Talk is the title of the book, their title, and it's about my life with the Red Wings and my story, my career, broadcasting, Toronto, whatever, and I dedicated to Jamie and the introduction to him and just our times together. That helped immensely. Just writing, and I'd be in my office typing away, and I'd be laughing out loud, funny, just writing stories, and Becca would say, my wife would from the other room, go, you're really amusing yourself, aren't you? I said, this is great, and I could just see it, and I could hear Jamie's voice and what he would laugh at, and that got me through, I think, probably till now.
Okay, the book is going to be called If These Walls Could Talk.
Yes, about
and,
it. I'll be back with you guys in October or November. How's that?
This is the place.
Yes.
To make your literary dreams come true,
Thank
Ken
you.
Daniels.
Thank you.
That's quite a story. Now, Barker, where are we at with the next part of our morning?
I told her 8:10.
All right.
I haven't seen it at 8 a.m.
Okay, well, what we're going to do is we're going to keep Ken with us. Herb Irving. This is going to get, we got Daniels, we got Herb, we got Shapiro, we got things are going to get
pretty Jewy up in here.
Things are about to get, we're going to get a minion.
So what are we waiting for Emily to call?
Emily's supposed to call. Ken's going to hang around. Ken Daniels, the voice of the Detroit Red Wings and a very good person. Seems like a good guy. You know?
Oh, he's a great guy. What's it been like living in Detroit for the past 20 years? Obviously,
Love
you don't
it.
Live in the city, but the burbs.
Obviously, you don't live in the city.
Yeah.
I like you said that. Wait till you see Little Caesars Arena. You two will have to come down and see our brand spanking new building next September. Mm-hmm. And the downtown is going to be revitalized.
Excellent.
Let me tell you something. The townhomes on Woodward Avenue 4 years ago, before this arena was, it was in a thought probably from the Illich family, but not from others. At some point, it'll go somewhere. Those townhomes that were on Woodward Avenue that were maybe 40, 65,000, which some of the doctors from Wayne State would buy and then lease out to students or whatever, are now $300,000 to $400,000. So
amazing.
So it's on its way
it's
back.
It's not quite Toronto. Got a long way to go for your Toronto. However, it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just going to say, hi, guys. Hi.
Hey, Barker. Hey, Barker.
Do you know I love Detroit?
Hi, Emily.
Detroit.
Hi.
Emily's there.
Okay, we're talking about Emily Muse in a second, and Barker's back. Hi, Barker.
Hi. Yeah, Detroit is actually my favorite city in North America, if I had to pick one.
Really?
Yeah, honestly.
That's unbelievable.
I love
that is unbelievable.
Detroit.
Well, you like all those buildings with no windows and
I
stuff.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. No,
Come
I mean,
on,
but
Fred.
There's so much. Like, Ferndale is amazing.
See?
I did some of the best improv of my life there. Ferndale's amazing.
By the way, Valentine's, when you're in Ferndale, Valentine vodka?
Yes, I have some.
Greatest.
I have their elderflower.
Rufino Valentine.
Yeah, it used to be a bootlegger.
Oh,
yeah. Listen, kids.
What are the rum and tugs like there?
Right, exactly. We could talk Detroit. Yeah. Well,
honestly, I love Detroit.
I'll tell you one thing Detroit doesn't have is Muse, massage, spa.
Not yet.
I don't know what people in Detroit are doing for jerking
coming
off.
Coming to Toronto.
Exactly. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
Emily Muse. Ken Daniels, the voice of the Detroit Red Wings, is here. And I'm going to tell you, Emily, one of the questions I was asked we've had a conversation. People are always asking me, what's it like at Muse Massage Spa? How do you describe this nation's finest emporium for rubbing and tugging?
I am.
Your reply.
What's that, my love?
What's your answer when people ask that?
I say, listen, stop doing this crap yourself. Get a professional. That's what I tell people. I go, listen, it's fine to wash your own car, but every once in a while you want to have it detailed.
Absolutely.
And that's what I tell them.
Do you deal much in out-of-towners, Em?
Do we what?
Do you have a lot of out-of-towners come in?
I love that.
Bus tours?
Lots and lots.
What'd she say?
Not too much.
Oh, not too much, no.
No, okay.
By the way, I love the
phrase.
Just
asking for a friend.
I love the phrase out of towners.
From away? We come from away.
That's such an R era. Oh, we got some people. Boy, how many out of towners?
Well, there was a movie, right? Remember the out of towners was a great movie.
MuseMassageSpa.com is where it's at. Emily, guess who's home? Our little Amanda Barker's back from Sudbury.
I know. Hi.
Have you guys been keeping in touch?
We have. I was telling her how I need to cleanse from all the pot and porchetta that I ate and ingested up there. There's a lot of meat, man.
What do you mean? Why is there nothing to eat in Sudbury but is it porchetta
roasted
or porchetta?
Pig. Porchetta.
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 Really?
Oh, porchetta.
Really?
In fact, they spell it up there with a K just to underline that. Yeah.
Emily, did you know that Sudbury was the porchetta capital
it
of
is.
Northern Ontario?
Of the honestly, if you look up porchetta in Wikipedia, yeah. Sudbury's there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's
I'm
a thing.
Not doing that.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
Emily's also a quite an accomplished amateur chef.
I know, she's amazing.
Have you ever combined your love of cooking with your entrepreneurial streak of having men's penises massaged?
How would that combine?
I don't know.
She made cookies for the girl. Yeah, she does. She brings in treats for the people.
No.
Yeah, I definitely bake for everyone, but no penis cookies.
Yeah, that was. Did you ever get into those? I mean, somebody sent us during the show. People would send us penis shaped treats.
I used to, pasta, penis pasta,
and cookies,
yeah.
And gummy worms and shit. It's like, what am I supposed to do
pasta
with this?
Di cazzo.
You know, your finer hotels sometimes when you arrive or when you leave, they give you a lovely cookie.
Yeah.
Maybe Muse should do that as well.
Yeah, but it's different when you're like, hey, eat a dick.
Hey, listen, we hope you had a nice time. Here, have some dick to
Here's
eat.
Here's a bag of dicks.
Right?
Here's a bag
Enjoy.
Of dicks for the way home. I'm peckish. I wonder what I should have. Do you have anything in a dick? Anything shaped like a penis? Ken Daniels, do you have any questions for Emily Muse?
None.
Of Muse?
None. I love Emily. Love listening to Emily. I'm just listening to you guys enjoying this.
Listen, he's got one of 31 jobs in the National Hockey League, right?
I'm not about to blow it.
And
spitting in with Emily. Yeah, exactly.
And these guys have a certain, you know, reputation that they have to uphold. That's why he's leaned away from the microphone.
Exactly.
I have a question for you.
That's a job for life, Howard.
I have heard about puck bunnies on the road, as they call
right.
them. Yeah,
yes.
But, you know, I'm staying out of that.
Hey, Fred, what's that like?
Yeah.
Having what? A certain... How did you put it? He has a certain reputation. What is that like?
No, I know. They're well-respected, these play-by-play guys.
Yeah, I know. Well, listen, Ken, you can... We don't want any of our stink to get on you.
Hey, listen. Get a load of this.
Yeah.
About a year ago, Romanuk, who used to be on the show, he started Hockey Night in Canada, as you know, or working with Rogers, and I sent him an invitation to come on the show, and he refused. He said, no, thank you, my right-wing friend. I'm afraid that I might say something that would get me in trouble. And he declined.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to send him an invitation to Muse, and he refused. Yeah, that would be really weird.
Yeah, Romanuk wouldn't come on.
No?
Yeah, see, you got a lot more balls than Romanuk.
Absolutely. Oh, way more.
That I do.
You do.
That I do.
And if we knew you better, we'd send you over there. Hey, Emily Muse wants everyone to go to Muse Massage Spa, now with a second location in Vaughan. No, it's not at the Bass Pro Shops.
I love the idea of these Taiwanese bus tours showing up at Muse. I'm still on that.
That's right. Listen, and Emily, my love, do you have a I don't know. I can't recall if there's a... Is there actually a television in any of the rooms?
No.
Yeah, because I guess I'm just wondering if a guy's going there and go, hey, listen, while I'm doing my session, can you put on the Leaf game?
Mm-hmm.
You know, just
in the lobby, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. In the lobby. I don't know.
You'd
yeah.
be watching golf, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's sad.
It is sad. AM, listen, during my session, I need to have the Masters on. what's new and exciting? March, this is the month of spring, and spring has sprung at Muse Massage Spa.
Do you have a St. Paddy's Day special at all? Anything green there?
Oh. No, but come April, we'll be having a new website and a new session launched.
Right on.
Oh. What, new, like an April Fool's session? Ha ha, I'm your mom.
No.
April Fool's, it's your mom.
Blue balls, see you later.
what is the new session?
I can't tell you.
Oh.
It's a surprise.
It'll be revealed.
Do you follow our friend Eileen Ross on Facebook, Emily?
Yes, I do.
She had a really funny line the other day about a massage parlor. Did you see it?
Maybe.
She said something like a different definition of a happy ending is when you're an attendant at a one of these places and your dad pops out and goes, "I'm so proud of you."
Yeah.
So a new session's coming. Listen, you can tailor make.
Yes.
Your session at Muse. Have one, have two, have three. What's that three banger called? I love that one.
The mixer.
The who?
The mixer.
Yeah, it's an old-fashioned mixer. Well, first you go to the cotillion, and then you go have a three banger at Muse Massage Spa.
I swear.
And what happens is you do 20 minutes with one woman, yes?
Yes.
And toward the end of that 20 minutes, another woman comes in and joins in for a few minutes, like a little overlap. And then the second woman stays and the first woman leaves in half. Then another 20 minutes with the second woman and a third woman comes in at the end of that session. And there's an overlap again. And then the second woman leaves and the third woman stays. Yes.
Yes.
It's like a rub and tug Venn diagram.
It's like Netflix when it's like loading.
Yes.
Next
it's
one.
Like next one in 15 seconds. And I think Fred brought this up a couple times ago, but I want to revisit this idea. Well, who can last for a whole hour of that?
I'd have to tie it off.
Super.
What?
That's the image everyone wants to see. Some fucking weird-looking
twine
around your sausage.
I'm picturing yarn for some reason. I'm picturing a nice, soft yarn.
I was thinking of that cooking string.
A cable tie.
You tie off chicken with.
Yeah, anyway.
Or pork. Oh. Yeah. Right. A roast.
Is there anybody that gets the three-person mixer?
Yeah, lots and lots of people. It's one of our most popular sessions.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. It really is, because it's so much fun.
Is there at the end of that, is there a reunion when all three come in and just jerk it wildly?
Because what if you're like, no, I want the first one back? You know, when you're like...
It's your birthday.
Mm. Oh. That's a lot of minutes.
So this stuff's actually going on, eh? It's crazy. This stuff actually happened.
In the world.
It's not fiction. Yeah. The stuff's going on. Yeah.
The stuff's going on starting this morning at 10 a.m. at Muse Massage Spa. All right, my love. Listen.
Thanks, darling.
You know that we love having you on, and there's love and there's affection.
I love all the love.
And and that's always great having you here. Barker, do you have any final words for Emily Muse?
No, I'm still picturing the bus tour special, the March Madness bus tours.
They stop off on the way to Rama.
Yeah, they're taking photos. Yeah. It's like one dude on a table and everyone else is taking photos.
Oh, my goodness.
That's right. Hey, Em, you be well and we'll talk to you soon, my love.
See you, darling.
All right.
Bye.
Ken Daniels is going to hang around with us now that he's like, okay, whew, all right, little Ken Daniels.
That
break.
Happened.
He's like, I just don't want to get any of that on me.
That's over.
Yeah, that's over.
All right, well, listen, Herb Irving, is that Herb? Herb's here? And a special drop in from Todd Shapiro.
Yeah, I heard.
And Amanda Barker's back.
Guys,
for the
back.
First time we've seen you in a long time.
I know.
Wow.
I know. A whole month.
It's Humble and Fred Radio. On the website, you can download past shows. This one will be easy to find. It'll just say Ken Daniels.
Yes, yeah. It will.
And we'll be back in a second on Sirius XM.
Hey, it's Kyle Kinane. You're listening to Canada Laughs.
Uh-huh.
Todd Shapiro rescheduled to tomorrow. That's how fast shit happens around here. Ken Daniels hanging in, voice of the Detroit Red Wings. Herb Irving is in the studio. At some point, we're going to talk to Herb about a comedy fundraiser. Amanda Barker is back. God damn it, I love that girl. Look at her. Look at her. Look at her. Look at her.
Hi, I'm back. I'm back. Here I am. I'm back.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of the fine people that support us here in this program. Frederick.
Yeah, how about this? Pizza Pizza. Order online or on your app and get a free 2-for-1 Cineplex movie admission. Spend $13.99 or more and get dinner and a movie from Pizza Pizza. The Pizza Pizza, that really is a fantastic deal. But realize, it's online only. From Pizza Pizza.
The top story today at FYI Music News. The Slate Family Foundation donates $12 million to Indigenous charities. One of the largest donations ever in Canada aimed at these communities. It'll support 15 not-for-profit organizations working to improve the physical, mental, and social well-being of the Indigenous populations of Canada, and good for the Slate family. They support so many things, including FYI Music News. Today you can also read about different conversations with artists, whether it's Amelia Curran or Ted Walishin. The great Ted Walishin featured.
Right.
FYI Music News, Randy Lennox, a story about him being named Bell Media president, and so much more.
Oh, that's a big job.
And once again,
that's a big job.
Oh,
right?
I don't even know where. What happens in a person's brain that they feel they're ready to be the president of Bell Media?
How is there enough hours in the day?
No. FYI. Why are we yelling? FYI Music News. Okay.
And quickly, let's just talk about the Mix and Match sale at Sleep Country Canada. It's on right now. Great deals on all the big brand names, Sealy, Serta, Simmons, Kingsdown, the mattress, the box spring. They don't match. Doesn't matter. You get a great deal. That's what it's all about. Great deals. Sleep Country Canada.
Barker.
Yeah.
Where you were in the Porchetta capital. Porchetta. I thought Sudbury was all about nickels. I don't know anything about Sudbury.
That too. You don't know anything about Sudbury?
Have
you ever
really
been?
No.
What?
I've never been to Sudbury.
There's a lot of comedy happening in Sudbury. There's a lot happening in Sudbury.
I live right here. I can't.
There's
go to
lots
Sudbury.
Of things filming up there. A lot of producers and people filming shit, and a lot of comedy and wicked food. Guys, I'm a walking tourist board
wicked
for Sudbury.
Food, eh?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there is.
Kenny, have you ever been to Sudbury?
Never.
Yeah, I see. It's
no Detroit.
Yeah.
See, Kenny, you're lucky. You never had to. You jumped right to the NHL. You didn't do any minor league play-by-play or anything, or OHL or anything, did you?
No, I went up to the Sioux one time to see Eric Lindros play when he was still in junior on a road trip we did. But no, I've never been to Sudbury.
It's nice.
No. And you know, there's an old. Yeah, I won't even go the old joke there. Sudbury. What? I thought only hookers and hockey players came from Sudbury.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, what team did you play
for? It's a great town.
You say it to a woman and she said, I'm from Sudbury. And then you say, oh, really, what team did you play for?
Right, exactly.
That's the old joke.
Women can play hockey, yeah.
Ken, you've been doing this so long. Have there been, I have a couple, just a quick couple hockey questions, then we're going to get Herb on. You know, oftentimes, what made me think of this is guys will have great junior careers. There's a guy named Doug Wickenheiser. Mm-hmm. Is that his name?
That was his name.
Mm-hmm. He played in the...
Still is.
Say again?
That's his name.
That still is his name?
Mm-hmm.
So he played...
Oh, he did? He died? Oh, all right.
He passed away? Really?
Oh, that's
right. I did not know that.
Right.
Okay.
Find another name now?
Nice work, guys.
You don't even know what I was going to say about him. It has nothing.
Well,
no disrespect.
You're a really good junior player.
Well, no, there's lots of guys that are amazing prospects. He played in the WHL. He was supposed to be a superstar. Went to Montreal and never really had the career he was supposed to have. Do you see that in 20 years? You must have seen a lot of that, where guys come in, they're highly touted, and fizzle. Or conversely, the second part of that question is, what about guys that sort of come in under the radar and they turn out to be a guy like Chris Chelios, or, you know, somebody that over exceeds expectations.
There are so many, and that's where the everybody is scouted now. Everyone sees everyone. Well, Neil Yakupov would be a perfect example. And the Edmonton Oilers probably at that time had so many good young forwards, probably should have gone for a defenseman, went for Neil Yakupov, didn't pan out. St. Louis organization now isn't even playing. That was a first overall pick. There are tons of them, and I think if you go through the first round, very low percentage actually become star players. Many are taken second, third round. You can go from Shea Weber and P.K. Subban and on down the list for players you think, wow, how did he last so long?
But the franchise you work for, there's remarkable stories. Name some of the guys and where they were drafted, and they've become like big-time NHL players.
Well, I mean, Zetterberg went in the seventh round. Pavel Datsyuk went in the sixth round. And some will say, well, if you knew how good they were going to be, you wouldn't have waited that long. You would have taken them earlier, right?
Yeah.
But, no one had seen Pavel Datsyuk play. Our European scout, Håkan Andersson, got on a plane in Russia, went to see Pavel Datsyuk, went to go see him again a few months later, and the plane, one of the engines caught on fire before they took off. He was actually pleased about that because there was a St. Louis Blues scout with him on the plane, and he would have seen Pavel. No one had seen Pavel Datsyuk play except the Red Wings. That's
a lot
why
of those
they took
stories.
But that's why I ask, because those kind of things always fascinated me about hockey in particular, because, it's like that old saying, past performance is no guarantee of future results. And in hockey, I think more than most sports, there's a lot of stories like that. Guy will have 60, 70, 80 goals in the junior leagues and not pan out.
Well, look at Nick Kypriou scored 60 goals in junior hockey and had an all right career, but not what...
Well, Kirk Maltby was a 50-goal scorer in junior, but became part of the famous grind line with the Red Wings and outstanding and leading to Stanley Cups. The old joke said as Maltby and Draper, as they got a little bit older, and great players, great contributors, not in a top 9 forward role, but on a fourth line, sometimes third line. And years later, the old joke went to Ken Holland, and somebody asked him, he said, what do Chris Draper and Kirk Maltby do anymore? He said, I don't know. I just know about every 4 years, they're waving to a million people so that's I guess what they do. So there are always the diamonds in the rough, and you find them, and that's why every scouting staff, and that's why this year the Red Wings, who are looking, I know they won't call it a rebuild, but you're stockpiling draft picks. They have 11 draft picks coming up this June, 4 in the third round. Those are where, and this isn't supposed to be a deep draft, that's where a lot of the picks are unearthed, and it may take 3 or 4 years for them to show, but that's where you stockpile enough of them and you wait for them.
So as a guy that grew up in Toronto, and I've been, listening to stories of the Maple Leafs from my friend Fred here for a long time, and lately, and I mentioned this to him a little while ago, I said, there's an excitement, there's a hope with this Leaf fan,
there
Freddie P, that hasn't been there for some years.
Yep.
We've been together through a lot of good years of the Leafs, and people forget that, the Leafs. But lately, he seems more excited about this team. What's the feeling around the league about our team, and what do you think?
They're going to be, in a few years, outstanding. They have a great coach. I was with Mike Babcock for 10 years. He's terrific. Does he grade on players after a while? Sure he does. And I think he thought it was time to leave Detroit, even though there was some talk. The Red Wings did want to keep him, but the management and Mike Babcock all wondered if the time had run out. 10 years. Claude Julien, same thing in Boston. After a while, you just get tired of hearing the
That's
same
right.
voice, and Mike can really be hard on you, but he makes players better. He's as well-prepared as anybody. Our head coach, who learned as an assistant coach under Mike, went to Grand Rapids, and now he's with the Red Wings. This Leaf team's going to be very good for a long time because they were bad for so long. Now, previous regimes, they were bad, and they didn't pick the right guys or rush them along. This team has a plan. Brendan Shanahan, Lou Lamoriello. I think Lou Lamoriello was a great hire for Brendan. Insulate from Mike Babcock. It's a well-run organization, and they're doing things the right way.
Along the Detroit model.
Although the model's
he said something. You said, Ken, you said this team's going to be good for a long time because they were bad for a long time. And I've sort of been asking Fred this. So they're going to be good, but are they X number of years away from being
Cup
like
contenders?
Stanley Cup contenders?
I give them 2 years, 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
Really? Yep. And then after that, they're going to run into problems under the salary cap era because now they're going to have to start paying
all those guys.
I mean, Austin Matthews, just put a blank piece of paper in front of him and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
He's that great. And with Mitch Marner. And whether a guy like Nylander gets traded mm-hmm. for a defenseman they need. They really don't have a stud blue liner, and that's what teams really need to be that cup contender. You look at the teams that win, and believe me, the Red Wings had Nick Lidstrom and haven't recovered yet. And when mm-hmm. Lidstrom was gone and Rafalski before that retired, you don't have that stud blue liner, and as good as Morgan Rielly is, He's not number one. But they're tough to find without moving out some other pieces, and that's where the puzzle has to fit.
As I said to Howard, I said, one thing about this Leaf team, it'll make my 60s that much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
I'll enjoy in sliding in my retirement years at least watching a half-decent hockey team. That's one thing.
I think it's great for you. And again, I've never been a big fan of the team, but I've always loved the fans. I mean, part of my affection is because of my boy Freddie here. And it would be great. I think it would be cool if you're at like 67, something like that. You know, just that sort of symmetry, the synergy between the 67 Leafs.
When I'm 67.
When you're 67. And just as they score the final goal.
I don't want to wait 7 years.
Just as they score the final goals, you're like, and then you die and they win. It's just beautiful.
See, you pick 67 and it's synergy since 67. When we did and Byron Fraze, I believe, was the guy who was traded for Brian Boyle in the deal. I think that's the one. Anyway, when I did a Leaf preseason game a year ago, Byron Fraze, a little forward, good penalty killer, was wearing number 67. And I said on the air, boy, 67 in Toronto, that's a tough number to cart around.
You really don't
want to be wearing that one. I thought the trainers had a great sense of humor to give them that number.
Yeah, you don't want to remind people.
No.
But just tell me, Ken, as a guy, an astute hockey man, seeing all the teams in the NHL and studying all the teams the way you have, tell me the Habs can't win the Cup this year. Just tell me that. That's true, right? They can't win.
I think it's going to be pretty tough. I don't think you want to finish first in the Atlantic, and it's a confusing setup how it is, but I think it's a little tougher that way. I think Washington and Pittsburgh are still the elite in the East, and I really still like Chicago in the West, San Jose,
but Ken,
Minnesota.
For the sake of fun on this show, could you just look them over and go, yeah, well, it's always a chance.
They got a great goaltender. Listen, Lloyd Christmas, there's always a chance.
Hey, Ken's going to hang for a little while longer. Right now, please welcome to our program. He's putting on an evening of comedy for a good cause, and he's got a great story. Please say hello to Herb Irving. Herbert!
Good morning. Hey, how's it going, guys? Herbert. Good morning.
Herb Irving, how are you, sir?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Good morning. Comedy aside, Herb, check this out, Ken. He was the captain of the Japanese national inline hockey team.
Championship team, that's right.
Championship team.
Yep.
What the fuck?
I was an English teacher in Japan, so I ended up being where the school had a team. Like, okay, so we went up 1 year. The first year we went was a full contact. If you can imagine full contact on an Olympic-sized rink on roller hockey. And the first week, they said, the first game, they said, look, we're all Canadians, basically. The team was like 15 Canadian guys. One Japanese-Canadian guy was the goalie, and then one Japanese guy was actually a good player. And it was full contact, and we said, okay, we're going to just hit the first couple of people we see. So I was starting the game, and I tattooed this poor kid into the boards, like just one of those smash into the glass, and it's just, and the referees immediately got his arm up, like, you know, paneled him, like, that's a legal hit. I didn't mean it. And kid never touched the puck again for the rest of the game. So,
what brought you to Japan? Because you had been a Yuck Yucks comic, and then you decided that you'd had enough
You've worked at the Empire. I know. Actually, I think maybe at some point in the early 90s, we might have done a show together at Bay in Yorkville.
Because I was went back to hosting some stuff there for Mark. In fact, I'm corresponding. Did you ever know Steve Schuster?
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah. I didn't make it to his thing yesterday, but I did know Steve. And actually, if I can quickly tell a great story.
We talked about this a couple of days ago. And I mentioned this on the show. Steve Schuster, who was Frank Schuster's son, Rosie Schuster's brother.
Yeah.
And Steve grew up in this comedy family, and he was one of those guys that Canadian comedians will talk about forever, the way that Canadian golfers talk about Mo Norman, just to give you some perspective.
Yeah, that's a great...
Like he was just one of those guys that never became super famous, but most American comics will have a reference of Steve Schuster. Yeah. Just sort of this, he's just this guy.
Was he out there like Mo Norman?
Way out there.
Way out there.
Like, they called him the comedian's comic. Which usually indicates the only ones laughing are us, but he did well.
No, I used to watch. Yeah, he did.
He was
really
a very funny guy, yeah, but a very strange act.
Absolutely, yeah. He, you know, I was a folk singer, but folks didn't much like my singing. Was I remember one of his opening lines, and there was a great story though at the Pilot. You know, that's around the corner from the club. So they would Pilot's $8 was a plate of wings at the Pilot. So Steve comes into the green room one time with my old roommate Paul Smith, who's now unfortunately passed away as well, and he's the only one there. And Steve says to him, "Look, I'm $8 short of a plate of wings, and I have a joint to sell." So Paul says, "Oh, sure, I'll buy that from you, Steve, no problem." Gives him the $8, and Steve looks at him and for a couple of seconds and goes, "Well? Oh, so I got to smoke this with you too, Steve. Sorry, let's go inside." So you didn't want to ask for the $8. You just wanted to go, "Give me $8 so I can get a plate of wings." So that was one of the...
There's a great story. Steve was watching a hockey game with his father, you know, Wayne and Schuster's Frank Schuster. And the game ends, and he says, the legend goes, he says to his dad, "You know, if we can leave now, we'll miss the crowds, but they're watching it at home."
"If we leave now, we'll miss the crowds." Yeah, yeah.
"We'll miss the crowds."
And then, well, Lou Eisen told another story too. Steve said, "How did it go?" Or somebody said, "Steve, how'd it go on the weekend?" He goes, "I bombed so bad they pronounced the second B."
But he was just one of those guys and I'm not surprised you knew him. So you went to Japan.
Yes.
And
to teach English, yeah. It was my main short was to teach English.
And Amanda went to Korea to do the same thing.
Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
And was it a one-year contract you got?
It was a one-year contract, but I had in my own mind that I was going to stay at least another year, and I ended up staying 5.
You don't need papers for that either. Like, you don't need to be a certified teacher, do you?
You might now. I don't exactly know, but I tell you, when I first went over, no, I went work for a company that said, "You have a university degree? You're in. Let's go." And it didn't matter what it was. It was irrelevant as to what it was as far as degrees go. So,
did you teach without a degree?
No, I had a degree. You know, I have a degree.
A TEFL, like a TEFL certificate, like.
No, I never had my TEFL or my TOSL or my EFL or whatever. But now, now you need that shit.
Yeah, oh, you do?
Yeah. Yeah. Son of a bitch. It doesn't take long to get, by the way, so they're easy to get.
No, I know. I thought maybe that's an option for us the last couple of years. Go over to Japan and teach people how to say fuck.
Oh, they already know. Have you not seen the T-shirts?
Today we're going to have two older teachers come in and tell you all the funny things you can do with poo.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
if you don't have a degree, if you have a diploma or anything like that, then you can go do Thailand or maybe Taiwan. Yeah. But for Korea and Japan, to get a visa for them to let you in for a year.
That's the thing, yeah. Yeah. In fact, it's funny you say that. One of my secretaries was cute little Japanese girl. It's lovely, quiet, didn't say much. And she comes to me one day and she goes, "Hapsan, I know some swear word in English." I'm like, "Oh, yeah." And without her missing a beat, she goes, "Holy shit, motherfucker." I'm like, "Wow, that is that is awesome." And then in all earnestness, she said, "Why is they say motherfucker, no say fatherfucker? Why you no say that?" I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. I can't answer that question. I don't know."
Because it's too real.
Yes. Now, did you pick up a lot of Japanese? Like, I know sometimes when you live in a foreign land, you become very... conversant in nouns, you know, the name for things.
Yeah,
harder to put the verbs into it.
That would be, I'm fluent in what I would like to refer to as izakaya Japanese, which is basically pub Japanese. I can order food and beer.
Did you learn from watching TV?
No, I learned from being there, actually, and I took a few lessons. And oddly enough, my ex-girlfriend lived in Japan for a couple of years prior to me even going over. I had no interest in going, and then a guy I worked with said, "Hey, I'm going to Japan to teach English." I'm like, "Awesome. Maybe I should look into this."
And yeah, you're like, let's see. I have a weekend in Edmonton.
Not
at
even
the
Edmonton.
Shit shack. Or I could go to Japan.
I'm going to Cambridge Steakhouse to do a fucking show. No, I'm like, I'm leaving.
Was there any Japanese play-by-play of that roller hockey? That would be cool.
Actually, they used to play music all the time, but I didn't hear any, so that would have been fun, yeah. It was mostly sumo guys who were playing against, too. So I got to be honest.
Sumo
it's not a big deal.
They were the goalies, just like the NHL. They're all
6'6" and about 4 feet wide. Yeah.
That's right.
They filled the cage.
So, and you say, it says here in the material that you actually were there at the Tokyo Comedy Store.
Yeah. That actually started up
in the mid-90s.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do... Well, I know you were teaching, but was there any stand-up for you to do while you were there? Or was that sort of like, now I can go do my act at a club?
Yeah, it was once a month started at the British Club in Ebisu, and then it moved into a bar in Shibuya, which is the main sort of, entertainment area, or one of the main entertainment areas in Tokyo. And, it was great. Once a month, it was pretty much the same audience. There were lots of English-speaking people that would come and see the same...
All the expats and stuff.
All the expats, yeah. And so it really was a force to... You have to write a lot, because people would come and say, "Okay, you did that joke last month, Yeah, one more month. Okay, that's funny. Now do something new in the third month or we're not coming
back. Imagine having to keep writing as a comic. That seems weird.
Horrible. Horrible. I can't rest on my shitty act.
Wait a second. This Reagan bit isn't working like
my
it
Milli Vanilli
to.
Jokes aren't going over anymore.
What about those lip syncers? Hey, Justin Timberlake touched a titty. Mm-hmm.
Can't you just change the names to update?
I'll try.
Listen, that Justin Timberlake touched a titty because it's still in the current. Listen, let's tell everyone to go to the Safe Rail Communities Evening of Comedy fundraiser.
Yes.
I'm not sure what any of that means.
It's Safe Rails Communities is a nonprofit transportation safety advocacy organization that started out about 2 years ago, actually. Spurred on by the Lac Mégantic incident, they thought, well, you know, this thing could happen somewhere in a major urban center, and what are the rules about transporting dangerous goods through these areas? And mm-hmm. so once the people started looking at it, they're like, they don't really have a lot of safety rules here that the company... it's not the company's fault, nor the oil companies. It's the government is basically responsible for enforcing transportation rules. So the idea is just to keep them on their toes to, maybe you want to slow down when you're going through a major urban center carrying, phosphorus fuels and things that could explode if they mix together.
Can you imagine that night? Those people just going about their business and then all of a sudden it's like being in the middle of a war.
Yeah, so, well, about Mississauga, even think like about the Mississauga train derailment.
Like, people were just vaporized, didn't they? Like, it
absolutely
was unbelievable.
Yeah. 49 people died and it was... And so imagine something like that occurring at DuPont and Lansdowne, in the junction where I live. And that's one of the spurs, actually. The people that started that actually live across the street from the tracks, and they could see just the number of cars coming down. And so they're starting to do some advocacy work, and this is why they need some money. So
it's tonight.
Tonight at 3030 on 3030 Dundas West, in the junction at the top of High Park and Dundas West.
Nice. And there's some really good, lovely people. Martha O'Neill, Tony Crollo. Hello.
You know Crollo.
I know Crollo.
Right.
Yeah.
Johnny Gardhouse.
Johnny Gardhouse, I know.
Yeah.
Brian Hatt.
Yeah.
Lori Elliott, Andrew Chapman, Karen O'Keefe, and Jeff Elliott.
I know Chapman.
Along with Katie Westman and Herb Irving.
And me.
I don't know, Ken and I are both sort of wondering the same thing. How is your name super Hebrew, and yet obviously you're not a Hebrew?
I'm a Goyim, big time. Yeah, I throw people off.
Once you said inline hockey, you lost a lot of the mishpucha.
Yeah. You didn't change the name?
I didn't have to. Why did I?
Herb Irving.
Well, I guess we're going to be in comedy. Why would you change the
right.
name?
Well,
Irving's not a Jewish name, is it? What? I'm an Irving. I have Irving in my family.
Listen,
you might
Irving
be related.
That's the first thing I asked Howard this morning. I said, Herb Irving. That, he must be a Jewish guy, right?
Irving? No.
Sorry. Yes, Irving Lazar. Irving.
Yeah.
First name.
Yeah,
Irving.
But that's what the thing is.
Irv Weinstein? Irv Weinstein. That guy, remember him?
When I first saw his name, I went, why doesn't he just call himself Jewy McJuju?
That's a Scottish name. You know, Irving Oil. They're not.
They're Scottish. That's
He's
right.
a first team, all first name team all star.
Yeah, there you go.
Herb Irving, like Jimmy Howard, the goalie for Irving.
Yeah,
Brian
right.
Elliott.
The guy with two dad names.
You could go through a lot of first names. You could have a whole.
Do you see that's Ken Daniels, the voice of the Detroit Red Wings? That's got to give you a bit of a. It's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting.
Two first names. Man with two first names.
That could be me. But I'm also a Leaf fan, so a little.
That's okay. You've waited a long time.
Boy, have we ever.
Kenny, were you a Leaf fan growing up?
Yeah. Oh, sure. Well, I did play-by-play for the Leafs before I came to Detroit. So
that's changed now. You're a Wings fan.
It changed as soon as I went to Detroit.
Wow. Well,
but I now that we're not going to make the playoffs this year, if the Leafs do, I'd be rooting for them. Sure.
Incredible.
Now, you guys were talking about Bob Cole running into a legendary play-by-play guy for you people in the States. He really is. I don't even know what the comparable would be in America. He's just a guy. I know. Vin Scully.
Vin Scully.
Yeah. Been a guy doing games for a lot of years on our national broadcast. And there comes a time, we people sort of make fun of the fact that sometimes he gets confused. He's an older man. So I wonder with Ken, like, you got a lot of names to keep track of. And I know this is going to seem stupid, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Sure, you know your own team and you're familiar with all the teams because you do this for a living. But are there moments, you do a lot of games where it's third period, a game in the middle of the winter that doesn't really mean that much. And you just kind of go and he's over to... I don't know who that is. No idea.
Sometimes you feel like it when the game's out of hand.
But do you have a big sheet with large numbers beside the names just for that eventuality?
I had a complicated system, which isn't so complicated anymore, because I don't need a sheet for our team. I just do the visitors, so I'll write them out by hand in notes that I have, and I have a book, and I've got all 82 games or 75 we end up doing that year with a roster sheet. you know what? When I do college games, and I did a lot of those the first year, I haven't done a college game, and you've got Michigan State playing Michigan, and you don't really, the first game of the year, you're not familiar really with either side. A few may have come back, like a freshman is now a sophomore and whatever. That becomes a little difficult.
Right.
Because you're not sure. So sometimes I joke, the first 10 minutes of a college game is the best game I've ever read. Because you're like, but here's the thing, people say, how do you keep up? Well, really, if you listen to a play-by-play guy, you're not calling name to name to name to name to name. That drives me crazy, and I just don't.
Yeah.
So I always tell my analysts, and Mickey does, Mickey will jump in a lot. It's not like the Bob Cole and Hockey Night where he's 80% of it. Mickey and I now are almost 50-50. So if I say so-and-so goes back to Danny DeKeyser, goes back to get it as the Red Wings start out, Mickey may talk, and he'll bring it up the ice past the three other people before it's in the zone. I always say, people, when you're watching on TV, there are moving pictures on there. People can see.
Exactly. You don't have to tell them
every. You don't have to every single guy. Yeah. And if I say, if Anaheim shoots it in and Getzlaff, you know, fires it in the left wing corner, I got time to check if it's number seven Cogliano going in there by the time he gets there.
But I like what Fred said, too, though. You know, it's like, because you would imagine you would have, and I, especially when you said big.
Big font.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. How old are you, Herb?
53.
Okay, so, you know.
I'm getting there.
That's what they should call your big font years.
The big font years, that's right.
This is what I'm in.
Let me make this bigger. Yeah. Expand this.
Like, this sheet with the Herb's information, that's about the font I would need. And it's gigantic. But you're right. You've got time to let things breathe.
And on radio, you can lie. So who's going to know?
Who's got the pipes? What about, because you mentioned that I golf and enjoy the game. Are there golf guys that you like? Guys that call golf for me, it's Johnny Miller. I also think as a host broadcaster, there's very few better than what's his buddy from CBS, Jim Nantz.
Jim Nantz is great. I love listening to Faraday.
Yeah.
And I love his show.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. I've taped Phil Mickelson two-parter tonight. Yeah, or last night it was on.
I'll have to go back and find it.
Yeah, because we were talking about television earlier, and the only thing I've taped this week is David Faraday with Mickelson.
See, Miller is just so honest, right? To the point that, you know, and who's the other, if it's not Miller, who's really cutting, it's usually Miller, isn't it?
Well, he's the guy on the NBC broadcast, yeah.
It's pretty, he can speak his mind, and I don't know if you hear a lot of that, not in hockey. I mean, Miller, and he's got to go into the clubhouse and see the guys when they're done.
Yeah, he's in an interesting position. He's been doing it a long time. And at first when he came out and he would say critical things about players, there was that, well, don't you have to, like, mingle with these guys?
Like about Baker Vance and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like when he would say, oh, look, there's old Tom Morris.
That's right. He's or got Ben Hogan.
He's got a wooden shaft. Is it going to hold up under these conditions? Yeah, I get it. You're doing the same bit that I do. How's Eddie Jackman working out? Is he Eddie Jackman? Because he did play a season with the Red Wings.
Yes, he did.
75.
Oh, you see him up on your hockey with the Rangers? He's got it.
No, I know.
But what I was going to say about Miller is at the time, when he got into broadcasting, he was well past being an everyday player and was a Hall of Famer, so he can say whatever he wants.
He can, but you've got to be accountable when he's in the clubhouse, and the guy will hear, because everyone hears what they say about him, and just like we do as players. But being a home team broadcaster, we're really not going to knife anybody.
For sure.
Guys have come up to me and heard things that I've said before. I mean, I remember more in the old school guys. Now everyone's so busy on their phone after games, they don't know. But Brendan Shanahan would hear things that maybe I said, and he'd come up and he'd ask me, and we'd explain things. But you're always there, and you're traveling with the team.
Yeah, you're on the plane, for God's sake.
So they know, and, you know.
Do you mingle with the guys on the plane? Like, do you play cards with them and stuff like that?
I know not to lose my money.
Right. Yeah, you're on that.
No, I'm too busy. But they sit right next to me as I'm watching something, and we'll talk about things, but no. The guys are at the back, and they're playing cards. And
I'm not in their game.
I'm
pretty
stressed.
Good lifestyle, though. So the season ends, and then you're off all summer. You don't have to sell cars or anything.
I'll be off April 9th. I do some golf events for the Red Wings and some speaking engagements, and I like them because the more you can do, the busier you are. Mm-hmm. So I do that, and we'll travel. We'll go Northern Ontario with friends, and we'll come back to Toronto and see family here. And
cool.
You
know.
Herb Irving's here. He wants you to come to the Safe Rail show tonight. And earlier, before you got here, Herb, we were talking about, you know, some of the people that Ken mixes it up with. You know, he's buddies with Babcock. talk and this guy. And you sort of indicated the general manager, you know, of a team like that is making a lot of money, you know, millions a year. Mm-hmm. But I always wonder when you're with somebody and, you know, it's public knowledge what these players make and what the coach of the Red Wings makes. Like he was making $4 or $5 million. Right. So when you're having a coffee in the hotel shop. Does he always pay, or do you have to go, okay, let me get this one?
Kenny's the most generous guy in the world.
Is
Kenny
he?
Holland, yeah. He'll pretty much always pay.
Good.
But here's, I do remember we were in, where was it? It was in New Jersey, in the hotel about 3 years ago, and I was walking out, and Trevor Thompson and I, who's our Red Wing game host, used to work at Sportsnet here. And Trevor and I were going to the mall across the road, and Kenny calls us in, and we went and sat down, because the players go in for their team meal now. We don't do that because we eat with them on the plane, but their team meal is their place after the skate. They eat lunch, and then they go up and have their nap or whatever they do. So we're not part of that. But Kenny's in there after, and he calls us in. We're going to go get lunch. Kenny says, you want to have lunch? And we go, well, sure, that would be great. And he said, what do you guys get per diem? I don't remember at the time. It was like $55 a day or something. He goes, oh, you're not eating the hotel for that. So that was nice of him. He sort of knew.
That's
so, you know,
funny.
We're going to Subway across the street, but here, have lunch. So it was nice. He offers that. And even the other night, David Shore, who was the creator of House, and we're on the road in Vancouver. And David emailed me during the game. He said, I'm in town shooting. We're shooting a pilot for a new show we're doing for ABC. So he said, you want to go for a drink after the game? It was one of those rare nights. We were staying in Vancouver. I said, sure. So Kenny Holland walked into the booth in intermission. He said, all our scouts are here. Trade deadline's tomorrow. What are you doing after the game? I said, I'm meeting my friend David Shore from House. And he said, where are you going? I said, I don't know. He said, well, come on up with us. Come on up. Have a team meal at the hotel. All the scouts will be there. They love to meet him. I love House. And he'll come up and introduce him to everybody. I said, great. So David came up, and we sat with all the scouting staff, and Kenny invited him up, and we all sat together, had some drinks, had some food.
Nice.
Wonderful. So they include us where they can, and I certainly respect the players.
But there's a distance you have to keep.
Yeah, for sure.
Where of all the what city do you like going to the most?
Chicago.
Other than Toronto? Oh, Chicago.
Wow. Chicago.
Great town. Yeah.
I'm not walking alone there at night, but Chicago. Yeah.
Before we leave, here's what we're going to do. We're going to hang around a little bit with everybody just after we close this out live on Sirius. But before we do, Ken Daniels, thank you very much. Voice of the Detroit Red Wings. Great stories. And again, sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Young man, Herb Irving. Want you to come to this thing, Safe Rails Community Evening of Comedy. Seems like a great guy. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. What do you got against Herb? So he's not Jewish? Whatever.
Yeah,
don't
so
be such
what?
A reverse anti-Semite. What else? So hang around a little bit.
Oh, can you grab my phone?
Before you do that, can you say goodbye, Philly?
This episode of Humble and Fred.
Yeah, we got to do this part first. Wait, let me see. Here we go.
Oh, hi, how are you?
All right, kids, we're back tomorrow at 7 a.m. Eastern.
This episode of Humble and Fred Radio is brought to you by Sleep Country, Pizza, FYI Music News, the Retirement Sherpa, and our newest sponsor, Carnivore Club at carnivoreclub.co. And as always, we broadcast to the world from the center of Canada's universe, Toronto, nestled in the cozy bosom of the Squatty Potty Storefront Studios and 5-Hour Energy Performance Zone. More Humble and Fred tomorrow and online at humbleandfredradio.com.